Hi, everyone. Before we get started with today's episode, I need to address some recent news. And also, I want to issue a trigger warning for the next minute or two. I'm going to be talking about sexual assault. So, if that's trigger for you, fast forward a minute or two until we get to the start of the episode. So, at the end of February 2020, a woman came forward with the story that alleged that Timothy Hutton raped her shortly after he became famous. I don't want to go into the details here, but the story was originally published on BuzzFeed News. So if you want to read the full account, you can go there and find it. What I do want to make clear here is that we here at Let's Go Steal a Podcast believe the victim and we stand with her. I've discussed this issue with my other co-host, and we honestly did consider just stopping the podcast altogether. But we have, at this moment in time, anyways, decided to move forward. The fact is, we were fans of the show before these allegations broke. We're going to do our best to separate the character of Nate Ford from the actor who played him. And as always, we're going to apply a critical eye to what the show is saying in every instance, just the way that I feel that we have for the past three seasons of the show. But as this story develops, we might need to change this approach. So, and I'll keep you updated if we decide to do something different. And as always, I welcome your thoughts on how we should handle this going forward. Thank you, and let's move on to this episode of Let's Go Steal a Podcast. Welcome back, everybody. Today we're going to be talking about the Lonely Hearts Job, and Robin is here to talk about it with me.
Hello.
Hello.
So this episode, which could be called Leverage's Valentine's Day episode, actually aired on Christmas Day, 2011, December 25th. It was written by Cary Glover. This is her first episode that she's written for Leverage, and I think maybe her first episode that she's written for anything. No, I think she had a couple other things, but she was, for the first several seasons of Leverage, a script coordinator, which means that she was like a liaison between the writer's room and the like production staff, and she was also in charge of continuity. So that's why everything tracks in this episode. She's really good at that. And this episode, oh, and it was directed by Jonathan Frakes. Good old Jonathan Frakes. In this episode, the team heads off to the Hamptons when someone they would normally take down turns out to be someone who's in need of their help.
Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun. And we have a lot of really fun cameos, special guest stars in this episode, which is really great. And we're about to meet one, but first, Nate and Elliot are having a quiet evening at the bar, reading together.
Just Elliot's just chilling at the bar in cargo pants.
In cargo pants with like a blingy chain. He's reading The Art of War by Sun Tzu, obviously. Nate's looking over some files because he's never not working. And the door opens and, you know, two kind of armed security looking dudes come in, and Elliot is like, well, it's time to throw down. Let's go. Doesn't even ask why they're there. Just, they're like, Nate Ford. And Elliot's like, nope. And he just throws the book and just starts beating them up. And one of them like pulls a gun on him. And this old rich white guy walks in. And he's like, do you know who I am? And Nate's like, yeah, I know who you are. Your name is Walt Whitman Wellesley the Fourth.
Such a good name.
Such a good name. Named, of course, for Walt Whitman, the poet, and Wellesley, the college. But also a reference to,
yes,
this actor's most famous role, David Ogden Stiers. Also, he has three names, which is great. And he played, he was on MASH, that's his longest running, like most famous role. And his character on that had like five names, one of which was Winchester. And he was like the third, I believe.
Yeah. I've never actually seen an episode of MASH.
Really?
Which feels like a thing that I should remedy. But yes, he was on MASH. He also, didn't he also voice Cogsworth?
Yes. This was something I was going to bring up because I was like, well, I'm going to see what else he was. So he was Major Charles Winchester in MASH.
Charles Emerson Winchester. So that's why he's Walt Whitman.
That's right. That's right. And yeah, I went to his IMDb page and I was like, what? Why is the video for the trailer is like right next to his picture on IMDb? I was like, why is Beauty and the Beast here? Who's he in? And then I was like, Cogsworth.
Well, and Jerry Orbeck was Lumiere.
Yes, I knew that. So I guess I just didn't know David Ogden Stier's name. Also, he's not British.
No.
And Cogsworth is British, so that threw me. I mean, Jerry Orbeck's not French.
Both David Ogden Stiers and Jerry Orbeck are such, like, they just look like middle-aged men, right? Kind of no matter what era it's from. So, like, upright. But I love the idea of the two of them doing Beauty and the Beast voices. I'd like to think that every time they ran into each other, they just chatted.
They only talked in those accents.
Yes, and their wives were just like, oh, this again.
That would be amazing. He also was the voice of Governor Ratcliffe in Pocahontas and somebody else. And then he was in Lilo and Stitch as well. You know, among a lot of other things, Stargate Atlantis, The Dead Zone. He was on the Lilo and Stitch TV series.
Did not know that was a thing.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. He was in 2 episodes of Touched by an Angel. He is not the first person who's been on Leverage who was in Touched by an Angel. But he played Satan who touched by an angel.
That's not where I would go with that. But you know, Leon Rippey, who plays
Latimer,
thank you, played an angel in Saving Grace, Holly Hunter show.
Yes.
Which was sometimes very excellent and sometimes not good at all.
Okay. I do love the name Leon Rippey, though. I gotta be honest. It's a great name.
It's a real good name.
Real good name. All right. Back on task. We haven't even finished the first scene. We haven't even heard this man talk.
Yeah. So MASH guy.
So MASH guy, Cogsworth, you know, Nate knows him immediately and he's like, I work for people who want to take down people like you. And he's like, you know. Then he just breaks down and he just starts crying.
Well, there's a really great little moment where Nate's like, I'm not going to help you. And he reaches out to grab Nate's arm and Elliot grabs like Wellesley's arm. And it's this really perfect, like boom, boom, boom shot of, I don't know. The shot made me really happy.
Yes.
And then it just cuts to him like sobbing.
Right.
Like full giant. Ugly cry.
Racking sobs. I agree. That is a beautiful, like, and it's immediate too. Like, this guy reaches for Nate and Elliot's like, mm-mm.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of moments like this with Elliot in this episode that they're just like little moments that he gets and they're beautiful. And Christian Kane just acts the hell out of him and he's so good.
In general, with this episode, when I was thinking about like, that's one of the episodes that's about Nate and Sophie's relationship. And then I was watching it and I was like, oh, this is really about everyone's relationship. It's like a check-in for the relationships on the team before you kind of go into the finale. I mean, I guess you have the gold job, which is weirdly out of place in like the season-long arc. It's kind of a...
And that's the next one.
Yeah, which I'll be back for. But then, like, this one, like, nicely sets up where everybody is before you go into the radio job and the last damn job. And yeah. that was, I feel like that's them setting up, like, oh, this is Elliot's relationship with Nate. Is, like, check. In this
yeah. scene. I like that. And we had, you know, the last two episodes were really Hardison kind of, and Parker kind of worrying about their relationships mm-hmm. with each other. And then by the end of those episodes, they've kind of settled down. And this one is, I feel like another writer could have been like, oh, this is a really big, like, Parker getting jealous of an auction or whatever, things like that. And yeah. the two of them, like, there's just, like, a scene where he walks in and they're just like, hey.
yeah.
They don't have a bunch, but it's not in a way that, like, we're ignoring this. It's just like, well, this is natural and we're doing our job. Like, it's fine. But yeah, it is, every, like, touching base with everybody else. Seeing...
We'll talk about it, like,
this week. Yeah, we'll get to it as we go through yeah. as well.
But so yeah, he's crying.
Now he's crying. He's like, you have to help me. And Elliot's like, okay, well, I'm gonna go get Sophie. This is more her deal, like, dealing with crying men and people.
Starts to walk away, and then Wellesley, like, sobs extra loud, and Elliot starts to run.
He's like, I'm gonna jog. Let's get out of here.
I'm really gonna go get Sophie now. Because he kind of played it subtly, and then, like, suddenly Sophie's there. Just like, there. Tell us all about it.
Exactly. And so we learn that Wellesley's young bride, Lacey, has gone missing. And nobody has heard anything from her. There haven't been any ransom demands. And, you know, Nate is immediately scoffing at this. Like, yeah, sure, you were in love, you know. It was this woman who was like a quarter of your age is definitely in love with you. And it's not because you're a billionaire. And he's like, no, you don't understand. Like, this is real. And then he does, like, kind of give this interesting backstory where he, you know, his kids are grown, his grandkids are grown, his first wife, he was married to her. It was, like, obviously, like, a love match, and she died. And then he was, like, depressed and just kind of, like, going through the motions. And then he meets Lacey, and he genuinely does, like, doesn't seem like a guy who's just, like, dumping women and going for younger women and things like this.
They did it very, it's very efficient. It's, like, two or three lines, and you're like, okay, like, I'm on board that this is a good old dude who's in love with a younger woman and has been done wrong. Like, yeah. Okay, it's just, it's really, yeah, efficient. I'm sticking by my word. It's nicely done.
Yeah. And Sophie is totally bought into this. She's like, okay, he obviously loves her and she probably loves him. We got to figure out what's going on. And Nate is Nate and doesn't believe this is true. And they're having this very loud argument. Like, not that they're, like, screaming at each other, but the volume of this conversation they're having in the apartment upstairs is kind of loud. And, you know, Sophie says, you don't have a romantic bone in your body. And Elliot walks by and he's just kind of chuckles. And she's like, oh, and you. And then she sort of just starts, like, roping him into it. And he's like, whoa. And she's like, yeah. So many women, you don't even know their names. They're, you know, waitresses and blah, blah, and stewardesses. And he's like, whoa, first of all, they're flight attendants. They don't like to be called stewardesses. It's disrespectful. And he's like, second of all, I know their names.
He's, like, genuinely offended.
He is.
Because I discuss this, though, that it seems like Elliot gets dumped a lot. Like, not necessarily that, like, he can't keep a relationship going. And it's not him being a player. He's just real bad at it because he's got to go punch people in other countries.
He's like, I'm sorry. I got to go punch people.
Yeah.
Or, like, I think Elliot's also the guy who's really upfront with people. He's like, hey, I'm not looking for a relationship, but we can have a really good time together and I will be respectful of you while we do it. And I think that's probably always, like,
sometimes they have him make really dirty jokes and it always comes off like weird and out of character when he does.
Yeah.
Whereas Parker comes in and is like, oh, you guys having a three-way? It's a much dirtier episode than they normally are.
And there were, like, a couple things I noticed when she says that, when she comes in and says it. First, the reaction is just like, I think a lot of actors would play it like, what? No. Oh my gosh. And like kind of get flustered in like a guilty kind of way. And they were just like, what? They're just kind of confused by what she just said. Like, do you know what you just said? And two, they had Hardison walk in after she said it and after they reacted. So he doesn't hear it or act like he's heard it anyways. So like, we don't see him like get all weird about it.
Yeah.
That, it was, I don't know if you get weird, but.
It was kind of a weird moment.
It was out of nowhere too.
Yeah.
Because also she's outside and they've stopped talking and she comes in and says that. I think the writer just wanted that to be said. Where are we? Okay, so Hardison just starts in with his, you know, running the job. And, you know, he says, like, as, you know, as far as old rich white guys go, this guy's not bad. He comes from really old money. He's a fourth. And like, he's like, his ancestors invested in IBM as they came over on the Mayflower old money. And he apparently the year before gave away more money than Bill and Melinda Gates did. So, you know, not awful.
Yeah.
And as for Lacey, we find out that she bought Wellesley at a bachelor auction at a charity event. And then they got married less than a month later. And we find out that Elliot is also, like, Hardison's like, Lacey's not great. And Elliot's also on board with the, you know, they got married so fast so that the background check didn't have time to clear. And, you know, don't have to worry about that prenup as much. But they look up on her, you know, accounts, and her credit card is, nothing's been happening on it. Her bank account, nothing since she's gone missing. Before that, though, she'd transferred over $2 million to a bank account in the Hamptons. But that bank account was emptied and closed 4 days ago. So, Oh, I guess we're going to the Hamptons.
But real quick, did it strike you as weird that they're like, oh, look at all of these CEOs who have been dying, all of these very rich people who have been dying, but they had already established that, like, Hardison has algorithms running to, like, keep track of possible marks, and, like, Nate has this long list of people that he's looking at, and, like, they didn't notice that a bunch of possible marks were dying.
Well, I wonder if Nate's just like, well, don't worry about that one anymore.
Like, I kind of wanted there to be a nod to, like, oh, yeah, I heard about that. Heard about that one, too. Like, oh, serial killer, maybe.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It just seems like if they're going to make it, that they're, like, murderous. It, like, the whole ring is murderous, not just, spoiler, not just, like, the one person, but, like, they're all killing people. Killing their husbands, like, that seems like it would get noticed. Where if it was just like, oh, there have been three suspicious deaths. I don't know.
That's true. And to have them all in one area, because they show the map and, like, the dots are, like, a little perfect circle with the Hamptons, like, at the epicenter.
And they're all, like, a month after. And, like, not all rich people know each other, but a lot of them do. And you'd be like, hey, didn't Bob just died? Like, Bob just died. Yeah, he just got married. Weird. Phil just got married, too.
That's so true. It does seem like something that's not... Okay, so it seems like something that's not, like, not long-term, like, sustainable over the long term, but also neither is youth. So she's just like, let's go. I'm only going to be this young for this long. So
I like the idea of the leverage crew accidentally finding a serial killer and having to, like, get that information to the right people to be like, this, we found the guy.
Oh my God. You know, it's Parker accidentally lifts something and doesn't realize it, like in our 12-step program, where she's like, I just picked up a gun, or, you know, just like, it's a bloody knife. Like,
Or like she picks up a note and then like a day later sees that note printed like from the serial killer and they're like, where, Parker, where did you pick this? Whose pocket did you pick this from? She's like, I don't know.
I don't know, I was in a crowd yesterday.
They have to like figure it out. I may have just watched Mindhunters on Netflix, so I'm very into like, but I would support that.
I think that'd be really.
You're still writing the Leverage reboot, John Rogers, since I know you listen to this podcast. I would watch them catch a serial killer.
I totally would. Anytime we want to throw that out there, just give Robin a producer credit, John, and Dean.
I don't even, a special thing Dean's more involved would be fine.
Okay.
I don't need a producer personally. Credit. Special thanks, maybe a hat of some kind.
Ooh. Also, like, didn't so-and-so die? He just got married a month ago. Where did they meet? Oh, that at that charity auction. Oh my God, so did Bill. So did Johnny.
I also think that would just be suspicious if, like, there was a charity auction and then, like, seven of the people got married a month later. They must not all be, like, there must, maybe she's running a lot of these scams. And yeah. They don't end in marriage. Maybe some of them are just some, like, light prostitution.
That's got to be how it is. Or, you know, you're just, like, it's a gamble. You want to up your odds as much as possible. See yeah. how it works out. And it obviously worked out with Lacey and Wellesley. And at this point, we think it's, you know, we're getting really spoilery before we get all the way in. But at this point, we think it's just Lacey, and she's probably a Black Widow. And probably a lot of these people have died. I think that's a big indicator of Black Widow status. And Parker is trying to come up with the, like, what are we going to go steal? And she's like, let's go steal a sweetheart. Let's go steal a widow. And she's like, let's go steal a spider. And Elliot's like, yeah. And it,
well, because he's like real disgruntled with the first few, and then he's like, okay. Which yeah. I feel like the nice, that's like where their relationship is at right now. Those yeah. two is like, he's supportive, and
his smile
but
was,
also
like, really
irritated.
Like, his smile is really like gentle and like, not gentle, but like genuine and easy. He wasn't just like, okay, fine, which is how it would have been in the past, I think. Just like, whatever, let's go. Begrudgingly, I'll, you know, accept that. And I'm in my notes, I'm like keeping track of Elliot's smiles in this episode.
Okay.
So they,
track of.
Yeah, they show up at this bachelor auction and they're all keeping an eye out for Lacey. And, you know, she's probably changed her hair. She probably changed her skin tone with makeup. She's probably wearing different clothes and padding to change her body type and all this stuff. So we got to keep an eye out for her. Parker is, like, using facial recognition software on her phone, but she keeps getting distracted by people's jewelry. And they're like, no, Parker, don't steal anything.
She's like, the diamond is not a facial feature match for this random woman.
And she just keeps going, taking pictures as people walk by. Which I'd be like, why are you taking that picture?
Like, that whole party, the auction scene, though, is visually, it's just pastels and, like, Madras plaid on all the men. And all the women are wearing, like, giant diamond necklaces. And Sophie's in this, like, very, very gold sequin dress that's just, it's like a lot for a daytime auction.
That's true, especially for like a duchess, which because she is bringing back her Lady Charlotte Prentice.
But she did that in the Rashomon job. Her duchess was wearing like a hot pink mini dress.
That's true.
So, I mean, maybe duchesses are real into mini dresses, but I've never been to a Hamptons party, but I really hope they all look exactly like that because it was so shiny and just so much plaid.
Yes, yeah, that man's, and if you notice, like in this scene, he's wearing the blazer, and later he's wearing the pants that go with the blazer. But like
the next
like
day,
shirt. Yeah, the next year, the Yeah, because this is really just a two-day job.
When you go to the Hamptons, you don't want a lot of luggage, so maybe he just packed a capsule wardrobe.
And I think, like, you can wear it spoilery.
You can wear it together.
Exactly. And I think, to be spoilery, I think since he's probably staying on a boat or a yacht, not a lot of luggage space either. So, yeah. So, you're right, though. There's lots of gold. There's lots of glitz. And there's lots of, like, pastel purple. Mm-hmm. Both Parker and the girl who bids on Hardison are wearing pastel purple.
It's honestly, it's all kind of bridal party-y, which I don't know if that's intentional or not, but it kind of goes with the general theme.
Yeah.
To have it look like all the women are kind of in bridesmaids' dresses.
Yeah. And it, I mean, this is the Valentine's Day episode, I would call it, on Christmas. But, so the boys are being auctioned off, which is always weird and uncomfortable, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
And they, but they do set up a bet between the two of them that whoever gets, you know, the most money bid on him is owed a steak dinner by the other one. And Sophie gives Elliot, he's going first, gives him some tips on, like, maintaining eye contact and things like this to get someone to bid on him. Like, he's Elliot. He knows how to flirt. He's got this. And he's being pretty aggressively bid on by this blonde young woman in the front. And he goes for 10 grand, which is pretty nice. And then he meets her and she's French. And he's like, ooh, French.
Yeah.
And Hardison's up next. I love their, like, different personas they're given. Like, one of the guys, like, Elliot's from Austin, and he, like, owns, like, an oil rigging place, and he caps the leak in the Gulf.
I really like that, because he's clearly pissed about being from Austin. Like, he takes that, he's like, that when Hardison set it up, because when they announce Austin, he's like, really, man?
So, okay, so you think he looks disgruntled when he looks back? I thought he looked like, yeah, I'm an oil guy. Like,
no, I think he was mad about being from Austin. And then he hears, like, that he's Barren Oil, which I think they've used Barren Oil before, or, like, that's from something else. Mm. And that he, like, led the team to cap the like, diving team. And then he's like, oh, hey, like, you did good. Because he's, like, yeah. I think he's mad about Austin at first, because that's not, like, where he would be from in Texas.
That's true. That's true. He would be, like, a West Texas guy. Because he is from Oklahoma.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then Hardison is, like, you know, obviously what he would be from Silicon Valley. He's even, you know, he's in tech and things like that. And he gets bid on very aggressively by this young woman in the front, and Parker is helping, like, get the bids up, but she gets distracted again by another necklace or bracelet. And I think she also gets distracted by Elliot taking a picture with his girl.
Yeah.
This photographer comes up and is like, oh, for the society pages, and she trips and he, like, catches her. And Parker's like, oh, klutzy, okay, weird. And
I feel like Parker is very judgmental of anyone who is not, like, quick on her feet.
Yeah.
Like, anyone who would not, because, like, that would, Parker would never lose her balance.
She's like, what? I mean, unless she is in high heels on a runway. And she would just fall right off the runway. Hardison has to, like, get her attention so she can bid more. And she's like, what? Look, I'm bidding on you. And the girl in front finally gets fed up, and she puts up $15,000 for Hardison.
Which, and is that, like, that feels, is that what you would spend? How, like, that felt like a lot to me, but I don't know.
I've never had $15,000 to spend, so right? I don't know.
Years ago, when I still lived in Tucson, there was like a big Humane Society fundraiser that also involved, like, a docu fashion show that I was in with my dog. I was, like, 14 and I was in it with my dog. And then they did like a, you could like shout out pledges and stuff. And there was this guy who like owned the Ford dealership. Like he was, you know, kind of a well-known guy who stood up and was like, I'm so moved by all these stories. Like I'm going to donate $5,000 to the Humane Society tonight. And my friend here is going to donate 5,000 more. And he like claps his friend on the back who's there with him, who looks up, who had clearly not planned on donating $5,000, but like him hands him the microphone and is like, stand up, say a few words. And I just, he was at like at a table. He wasn't at our table. He was at the one next to ours. And I just remember the like giant shit-eating grin as he's like totally set his friend up for this.
It was, do you know amazing. Who that, you know who that guy is? That's Buddy, God, what's his last name? Buddy from Friday Night Lights.
Buddy Garrity. Yeah.
Buddy Garrity.
Well, this was like, if anyone from Tucson is listening, hey Corey, it was Jim Click of Jim Click Ford and Automotive. it was an amazing thing to see. So maybe 15 grand is,
I mean, people in the Hamptons have a lot of money. And he even says at the beginning, he's like, get those discretionary funds out. I'm like,
true.
What even does that mean? So the photographer who took the picture of Elliot and his date earlier approaches Sophie. And Sophie's kind of like rolling her eyes. And she's like, commiserates with her about, oh, do you remember when women used to have self-respect? And they kind of, and dignity, they kind of talk. And she introduces herself as her, Lady Charlotte Prentice persona, which we know from the King George job. And the other lady who's played by Emma Kaufman.
Caulfield.
I was like, I said it and I was like, that's wrong. Emma Caulfield, AKA Anya from Buffy. Mm-hmm. She's so wonderful. I love her so much. And she's like, oh, you're a duchess. Can I take your picture for the society pages? And Sophie's like, sure. And then as she takes it, she like coughs and covers her face. And the lady doesn't go, oh, let me take it again.
No, Anya's like, just fine with it. Like, does not care.
She's like, Chula looks at it and she's like, perfect. So weird. You know, and they chat for a second and then she heads off to take pictures of the highest bidder and her date. And as she goes over to take the picture, Hardison's date trips as well. And Parker's like, they're both klutzy. Oh, that is weird. And then she, Meredith, trips into the table where Nate is at. And Nate's over, like, giving out samples of whiskey.
Yeah, just randomly has set himself up as, like, a free-roaming liquor distributor.
I mean, that kind of makes sense. Like, you're going to drop a bunch of money on this charity, so you probably paid to get in. You're going to get free liquor and also, like, hey, buy this later from this guy.
I realize that there, you know, there are things that have to happen for the plot to go along, but I have the same problem in a scene in a minute where, like, Elliot and Hardison both just show up for work at a restaurant that's, like, super exclusive. Where, like, it's all well and good to say, oh, I hacked into the system and put you on the schedule. But, like, people work there. People yeah. will be like, who's that guy? Like, why is there new? Like, I've worked retail. People don't just wander in and start working without any sort of, like, hey, you're like, hey, boss, why did you hire a new person? And, like, so I feel like someone at that country club would be like, hey, why is this guy serving whiskey instead of this other person we had hired? Or like, why is there liquor happening now? Like, someone would have some question about it. So it's yeah. just weird when they go in under the guise of like gainful employment, as opposed to just like, I am a guest at this event that has guests.
I think that's like a downside to this being like, oh, each episode we have one job. And we, you know, you've got a short timetable. Because, like, if you read heist books or, like, a heist movie, they have more time, or I guess they feel like they have more time to, like, set up, like, okay, yeah, this guy's been washing dishes in this kitchen for months and months, and that's why he can get us into this thing, because we set this up way in the future, yeah. way in the past, because we knew we would need this access. But we got to get at things a little faster, and we don't want to spend time setting up, oh, yeah, we've actually been in the Hamptons for 6 months trying to get her,
yeah,
which I think is more realistic, but doesn't really work.
That is one thing I think they do on Hustle, which is like the British leverage. They have a little bit more of like, time does pass, where like sometimes there's a montage of them going and getting the things they need and stuff, but yeah, it's just
it's boring to set that up, you know.
It is, and so they're usually like, here's a, you know, real quick glimpses. There's just something about like the fact that Nate was there under the guise of like being a liquor distributor seemed odd to me, that he wasn't just a guest who had like shown up.
Yeah.
Or like unless a guy who was already
unless there was already gonna be a liquor distributor there and they paid him off and they like slipped in instead of him or something.
Oh, that's true. Okay.
I can see that. But he has she like names the whiskey that he's given her to do a little shot of. And it's a Balmore, which is actually a faked whiskey name that's used in a lot of television shows. So, you know, to get around copyright and, like, you know, having to pay, there's lots of, like, faked names and faked labels that you'll see on things. And Balmore is one that kind of shows up a lot.
That's cool.
Yeah. And so she's over there and they're, like, chatting and flirty. And then Sophie's approached by the auctioneer in his lovely blazer. And, you know, he's, like, chatting with her and, like, gazing into her eyes and all this stuff. And suddenly she's hearing all the other things that are happening in the comms. And she realizes that all of these people are grifters. They're all, like, staring into each other's eye, into their other person's eyes. And, like, all of these things. She's like, oh, my gosh, this is textbook.
Yeah, she says that soul gazing is when you stare deep into someone's eyes, and even 2 minutes of it can, like, produce feelings of real love. And apparently that's a real technique that, like, people use for tantric sex and pickup artistry. And it sounds like the creepiest thing. I'm just imagining some man I've never met, like, comes up and introduces himself, and then for 2 minutes... just stares intently.
I mean, I think you can talk while you're doing it.
It just, that's a long time.
It is a long time for, like, sustained eye contact, and that's hard to do. It's very,
I mean, right now I have not made sustained eye contact with anyone except my partner in 5 months because you can't make eye contact through a webcam. But
it's true. It's true.
It just sounds like really intensely uncomfortable, like, meet cute.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. But apparently it works. And the falling thing helps make the other person feel like they are empowered and they're like the protector because you caught them. And she's like, oh my God, they're all in on this. Every one of them. So they realize, you know, there's someone there. So Nate is in the middle of flirting with Meredith. So, and I love this. He's like, I can't do this right now. Sophie, you run this. And then we get this reminder, which I think is kind of goes back to your point of like touching base on like where everybody is in their relationships. And this reminds us that when Nate was in prison 2 seasons ago, Sophie was running the crew and they did several jobs without him. So she's like, okay, this is what we got to do. You know, Elliot and Hardison, like, keep talking to your girls. Parker, I need you to do some lifts. And she's like, yes! And she immediately, like, lifts somebody's watch. And she's like, no, just phones, because we're going to go clone some phones. And they're really cute. Like, she, like, dances against Hardison's back to, like, clone the one girl's phone. And she just stands really close to Elliot and his girl while he's whispering in her ear. And Sophie clones someone else's. But they find out that all of their phones are just burners. There's no numbers on them. There's no texts or GPS. And she's, you know, they kind of realize this is a whole ring, and that means whoever the ringleader is here, because they would want to be here in case something went wrong so that they could do damage control.
Parker calls it an assembly line of grift, which I love. There's like a real small ongoing thing that when they run up against like really other grifters, it happens in the ho-ho-ho job where they realize like there's multiple grifts going on, and Parker's always so impressed by it. Or like, she's not in awe of it, but she's always just like, this is cool. They're doing this big scam, you guys.
I didn't know other people could do this besides us.
She's so like supportive of other people's grifting.
Well, she knows how important it is to have found a group of people that she can work with. So maybe she's just like, I'm so proud of them. Because to her, everybody works alone until she met, you know, the Leverage crew. So
that's, yeah.
Maybe she's just like, they found their own family. Which is not usually how it is.
Yeah.
It's usually just big mean Santas and chaos.
Ugh, chaos.
I know. So they need a disruption, and now Nate has gotten back on into the game, and he tells Parker that she needs to go pick a fight with Hardison's date.
Nate, use your words.
You have to know that Parker is very close to being, if not already, on the spectrum. She needs very concise language.
Yeah. She will do what you tell her to do, literally. So, pick a fight means
you walk over and sucker punch a small woman, much smaller than you. And then she, like, holds her at bay. Like, she just has her hand on her head and just, like, holds her at arm's length, and the girl can't hit her for a second.
Parker has not seemed jealous of the attention Hardison was getting. Like, she seemed a little perturbed by it, but I think more from just, like, how the other woman was flirting with him. Just like, oh, that's how she's doing it? Like, oh, that's weird. But yeah, she was gleeful about getting to punch someone.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And yeah, can't like the other woman can't land a punch. it's a full-on brawl.
So good. It's so good. Yeah, like she's got her like on the runway, like the stage area, and she's about to punch her again, and Artisan has to come like pull her off them. And Nate's like, no, I didn't mean no. And Artisan said, he said distract her, not beat her ass. Parker's like, oh, okay, sure. And they notice that like all the girls kind of run to this woman that she just got beaten up, including Meredith, who's like herding everybody, like making sure everyone's okay. And they're like, oh, she's the ringleader, okay. And they're gonna need her files because she obviously has intel on all the people that she's, you know, killing, taking down. So they need to get those files so they can take down the whole ring. And they say, this is when he first brings it up, but Nate says they're going to do a high mini variant, which he goes into a little later, so we can talk about it a little later. But he pronounces it high mini, and it should be Hoya mini, but that's fine. Mm. Whatever, his German's not great. And this is Nate and Sophie talking to each other. And as they're talking, Meredith and Sangi like walk right by them. Like walk like around them. And then Nate meets up with Meredith in the lobby as Sophie goes ahead to get her wrap. And I'm like, she didn't notice them talking right then at all? I'm sure she was concerned about something else, but.
There's always stuff to nitpick in shows, particularly shows like this that have a lot of moving parts and depend on like duplicity and stuff. This episode though felt much more rushed than a lot of them. Like there's a couple of line readings that are just flat out bad. like there's one later on when Meredith is in a car when she's like, oh, clever boy, you really did think of everything, didn't you? Like, it, and there's no, and you're like, that's not how you would say that line. Like, that's wrong. And so I kind of wonder if they were, like, rushed in how long they had these locations, or like, if the director wasn't confident, or if they only had, like, if maybe they only had Emma Caulfield for a day or two or something, or if they were like trying to save money on filming here so they could make it up with one of the other episodes.
Yeah.
Cause it really, there's parts of this, cause I didn't clock that one in particular, but there's a few other spots where they're talking on their comms that were like, or, and it's just like, that doesn't, this doesn't make any sense why this is the way it is, and something about the way it's blocked is really bad. So I just think they didn't have, I don't think it's incompetence. I think they just didn't have the time to work it out the way they
wanted to. And I mean, it is the first episode by this writer, so it could be a little bit of a, like, just trying to get these pieces moving together is a little harder. But
I don't think it was all the writing issue. Some of it seems like it's a directing thing. I don't know. There was another one later on. I'll point out when we get there.
Okay. Where are we? Okay, so Nate, you know, leans over to Meredith as he walks up to her in the lobby, and he's like, so you're not really a photographer, are you? And she tells him that she knows that he's a con artist as well. And he obviously knows that she's part of a crew. And then he talks like he's part of a crew as well. And I wonder if that kind of explains some things later that are weird to me. But I don't think she obviously doesn't know who all is in his crew. But he does keep saying we. But then she only wants to see him work, which is very interesting. And
I guess I assumed that he meant Hardison and Elliot.
Mm-hmm.
He had left Parker and obviously Sophie out of it.
Yeah.
Because they, you don't get anything about the girl, the Marks trying to go after, or the other grifters going after Elliot and Hardison.
That's true. They do kind of stop. Huh.
So.
Yeah, that makes sense. And also why, like, later when you see Hardison and Elliot, like, they're not like, hey. Because yeah. they know that they're in on the thing. But at this point, he doesn't know that Sam Gee is with her.
No, and that's, I was going to bring that up when they get to it, that they're just, or like, he, wow, he, they really just assume,
he doesn't
that
say he, that he knows.
Yeah.
But I think it's, like, pretty clear from just that scene when Sophie puts it all together, because he's staring at her at the same way that the girls are staring at the boys. And she's like, oh, they're all doing this. This is all soul-gazing.
Yeah. That's good, because otherwise I was going to have some issues with the fact that they're just like, Hardison can play the sommelier, and he won't notice that he met this guy yesterday. Like, that's hinging a lot on his either racism and thinking that all black people look alike, or classism and that he won't look at a server. Like,
yeah, and I think this could also be part of it.
It's like, your whole thing falls apart if he's not a grifter and is a decent human being. The whole thing.
And he doesn't come up to Sophie until Meredith has talked to her and ascertained that she is a duchess.
That's true.
And then he's like, the next person we see Sophie talking to is him walking up and being like, oh, a beautiful woman who looks thirsty. That's not good. So, Meredith is basically telling Nate that he needs to, like, get out of town because this is her territory. And he's like, hey, we could work together. We could team up. And she's like, I don't even think you're on my level, dude. And he's like, no, you don't understand. I've been picking up widows and divorcees for longer than you've been alive, basically. I can pick up anybody. And she's like, oh, really? That lady over there is actual royalty. If you can go pick her up, then maybe we can talk. And he's like, all right, let's go.
You also get a totally unnecessary flashback to when Meredith met Sophie. There's a flashback to, like, 3 minutes before of, like, Lady Shirley Prentice, ooh, a duchess, may I? And, like, normally when you get flashbacks, it's either to point out something that you missed or, like, to show something that they didn't show the first time out. But this is, like, we are going to play the exact same scene in case you forgot that these two characters met. And there aren't very many flashbacks in the episode, so I don't know if they, like, needed to put one in because they rely really heavily on flashbacks at the very end. Mm-hmm. But it's like, why did you that whole scene was so unnecessary to show again. It might be the worst use of a flashback in the entire five seasons of the show.
It's like a little offensive. Like, this happened 2 minutes ago, but just in case you forgot.
Yeah.
Sophie's going as Lady Charlotte Prentice. Interesting. I mean, it does kind of underline the fact that she believes that Sophie is who she says she was. But, I'm kind of with you on that. Unnecessary. But as Nate goes to put the moves on Sophie, Sangi shows up and he has her wrap and he's like, oh, let me buy you a drink. And she's like, all right, let's go. So Meredith, even though she has her clutch in her hand, she pulls her business card out of her cleavage and gives it to Nate. The first time I wasn't super paying attention and she pulls it out and I was like, oh, that's like her coat check card. I would keep that there too. I don't have pockets. But then I was like, wait, she's holding a clutch. Also, she wears her camera bag.
Maybe that's her real business card. Maybe that's her grifter business card.
And she can't get them switched up.
Right.
Because that'd be bad news bears.
Right. Because otherwise Nate will be like, I want to call that lady, but why do I have this photographer's card? Waka waka.
Yes. Flashback. Oh, that's right. Yeah. So he, you know, he gets the card and she's like, call me tomorrow and I'll watch you pick her up. And if you do it well, then maybe we can work together. So he sends Hardison off to track Meredith and Elliot to follow Sophie and Sangi, see what's going on. And then they're back at the, and I guess you're right, like weird outfits to be wearing because it was obviously like the middle of the day. This wasn't an evening event because then they're back at the hotel room and the sun is like starting to set outside and Parker is like icing her jaw and she's got her like hoodie up and she's kind of like cuddled up and she looks sad. And he's like, okay, I'm sorry. Like, I promise next time I'll be more explicit in my language. And she's like, okay. And she like puts the ice back down and like flips her hoodie back and like, bounds over to like their murder board on the mirror and like looks at stuff, which is so funny. But I want to point out that in the commentary, they said that this set is actually in a warehouse and like that the little patio looking out on the water, that's just like all green screen. And where you can see, because there's like the little fencing and you can see the sand kind of go up. Aldous Hodge is like, that's just like a sheet just held up and with like just sand on top of it. And it looks really good. Like they have the lighting, the green screen effects.
I thought they were on location somewhere. I thought they'd gone to like the Oregon coast.
Yeah. No. Amazing. And they said like the next morning there's a scene where they're sitting out on that little patio and it was there that scene originally wasn't set there, it was set somewhere else, but the actors kept going out and sitting on those chairs. They're like, oh, we'll just shoot here, it's fine.
That's really cute.
I mean, that's adorable. And Hardison comes in because he's lost Meredith, but he hacked her GPS, so he's able to get some addresses to follow up on later. And Nate tells them that they're going to run the High Mini, or the Hoya Minna, which is the high courtly love of like medieval literature, wherein the knight proves his worth to the noble lady by doing acts of bravery and chivalry to prove that he is worthy. And I'm like, oh, I like that. That's great. And Hardison notices that he's got Sophie's comm on the computer has it muted. And he's like, why do you have Sophie's comm muted? And then he turns it on and she's like giggling. And Parker's like, well, that's Sophie's real laugh. And Nate's like, meh.
He says it like in a very concerned way. She's like, oh no, that's Sophie's real laugh. We don't. No, no, we don't. We're not bringing it up.
But also when he says the stuff about the high courtly love and like doing the acts to prove your worth to the noble lady, Hardison's like, that sounds like a lot of work. And he kind of like looks over at Parker and she's not paying attention. But then I wonder if that like kind of comes back at the end, at the very end of the episode, what happens. But Elliot's not there to hear that, so I don't know. Unless he heard it in the comms. I don't know. So I do love when Parker realizes, she's like, oh, Sophie's not the noble lady. Sophie is the challenge. Like, oh, I gotcha. So he's got to prove himself to Meredith. And later that night, Sophie's like sneaking into the hotel room in the middle of the night. She's got her heels in her hand and she's a little tipsy. And Nate like wakes up and she's like, oh, were you listening on the comms to get some tips on dating and seducing me? And he's like, I have dated before. He's like, you and I. And she's like, oh, no. Oh, sweetie, no. Whatever we are, like, we are not dating. We haven't clarified what we are doing, but it is not dating. And then he's like, he wants to plan what they're going to do. And she's like, no, it's got to be genuine. I can't react to a script. So, and then he wants to like fool around and she's like, no, I have to go get my beauty rest. But this is like after she's like slunk up to him on the bed and is like kissing
taking
him.
Taking her hair down.
Yeah.
It's
and she's also, like, bye.
Their relationship is very weird. Like, she is mad that he wasn't jealous about listening to the comms, but like, he's mad that she was grifting or like, yeah, I think because she was like, oh, you were like, weren't you listening to the comms, like getting some tips? I hope. Like, and he's like, ignoring
that.
Oh,
is like,
it's like
jealous.
Salty
she was
about
just
it.
Like, oh, I thought she was just like teasing him.
I don't know. I just felt like the whole thing.
She was a
really
little salty about him flirting with Meredith at the auction for sure.
I feel like they're not in that scene. It shows that like their relationship is not in a great place. Like, they're together-ish, but not, like, solid.
Yeah. Well, he doesn't want to, like, I don't know, he's messed up, he's Nate.
Yeah, so I just feel like they're this scene gives their relationship a little bit of growing space for later in the episode, and then, like, the last few bits of the season.
Yeah.
Because that they're not a totally, and I feel like they get there in the next season, like in season 5, they're much more solid as a couple. And
yeah,
they still haven't quite figured it out yet.
Yeah, and they were talking about that in the commentary. Like, you know, you don't just fall into love and it's like an ideal relationship. Like, especially if you're people with all this baggage, like it takes a lot of work and like figuring things out. And you know, we've seen them be rocky throughout this whole season. Like in the office job where they're like yelling at each other via another person and all sorts of stuff. So yeah, this is like still rocky and then it does stabilize a little in this episode. And then honestly, I don't remember what's going to happen next. So it'll be a surprise for me until I'm watching it and remember. But yeah, and then there's some cute scenes later in this episode. So the next morning, Elliot comes by to give his rundown of what Sophie did the night before. And they have like this like almost like screwball comedy 1930s like dialogue about the name of the bar that they went to the night before. And he was like, yeah, they went to a swank bar. And he's like, well, I don't need you to editorialize, just tell me the name of the bar. And he's like, after they left swank. It's like, that's okay. And you know, he's impressed kind of that Sangi has been able to get them into places because these have like really long waits and that must mean that he's got money or connections.
And he's impressed by the wine they drank or like what they ordered.
Yeah. And he's like naming the cocktails. He had three blah blah blahs. And oh yeah, like this restaurant is like got a 39 Zagat or 90, I don't know what the scores are. And he's like, it's Michelin starred. All this stuff. And then yeah, he's like, he says San Gui, and that's the first time we've heard Oscar San Guillermo like referred to as that. And Nate's like, San Gui. And Sophie comes out in her robe and she's like, oh yeah, he prefers that to Oscar.
I mean, it's a better name. It's a good nickname.
It is a good nickname. And Nate's like, And Elliot like immediately like gets up and he's like, I'm out of here. But then he walks
in a robe. High chinks will ensue. I must leave.
He's like, I'm uncomfortable. But then he like walks through and, you know, so he's like, ah, what a day. And Nate's like, yeah, what a day. But Elliot finds Hardison inside and he's like, sometimes it's fun to kick a man when he's down. And I was like, but you didn't kick a man while he was down. You just left.
Oh, I thought he was talking about like when he was sort of needling him about the what Sophie and Sangi have been doing all night. Or like all evening.
But I didn't read that as needling because Nate told him to do that.
Yeah, there was something when one of the things he said though about like maybe it was the getting reservations part felt like sort of a pointed, like, ha-ha.
Yeah. I don't know, I felt like he could have been meaner.
Mm.
Yeah, and Elliot's, I mean, Hardison's like, well, speaking of which, have you found a restaurant for our steak dinner yet? And I love that he says our steak dinner, like it's going to be a date. Like, are you going to take me for our steak dinner? And he's like, no, the bet's off. And Hardison's like, what are you talking about? No, I earned a steak dinner. But he's like, no, they were grifters. It doesn't count. But then he like argues him down and he's like, no, you have to, like Elliot's like naming parts of the bro code.
But so then Elliot's like, fine, I'll make you, when this is over, I'll make you a prime rib. Which is honestly probably better than what you would get.
Oh yeah,
in a restaurant. Oh, yeah. But then Hardison asked for it well done, and I was like, "Wait, do you eat prime rib well done?" And I full on Googled it because I was like, "I don't do. Is that a steak that you can eat?" Apparently, yeah, you can eat it well done, and it's not like.
Oh, it's not trash. Okay, well, I'm just thinking like, you know, when they have a nice dinner and everybody's got wine or a beer, and Hardison has like orange soda in a goblet, like. I don't think he has, like, high-quality taste.
No, I would just feel bad for Elliot if he had to, like...
But he also doesn't scoff at him. He just kind of, he's like, well done, bone in. And he's like, bone in, well done. And then he smiles again. We have another Elliot smile. And it's a genuine smile. He's like,
a sweet little smile. He's going to get to cook a bunch of steak.
For his boy. Okay. Yeah. And then Hardison's like really pleased because he's hacked into the restaurant and he's gotten them both positions. Elliot's going to be a sous chef, which he can do very easily. And Hardison is going to be a sommelier from South Africa. And Elliot's like, does this mean you need me to teach you all the wine stuff again? And he's like, I think that's really rude. Yes, I do need you to teach me the wine stuff.
He's really offended and then has to come back around.
He's got his pride.
I just don't know. Why don't you just make Elliot the sommelier?
Well, because Elliot has to beat up Sangi later. I mean, I guess...
Hardison could do that.
And actually, Hardison leaves. Like, so Elliot could have followed him back and beaten him up.
Yeah.
As they went to the bathroom.
It just seems like send the guy in who actually knows how to talk about them.
Yeah, I don't know. While they're getting ready to go to brunch, Parker goes to the first address that Hardison got on the GPS, and it turns out it's a marina, so she can't really search every single yacht on the marina for these files. So she's going to go to the second address. And then Sophie and Sangi are seated at the restaurant for brunch. So this is a Portland restaurant, because they, like we said earlier, did not shoot on location in the Hamptons. I don't know why. It's cheap.
Go to the Hamptons.
But in the background, you can see a large bridge. Do you think it's the bridge from the librarians?
I mean, one would assume.
How many really tall bridges are in Portland?
At least one, and it's probably that one.
Yeah. So I was like, wait, but I didn't, it was like at the end of the scene and I didn't rewind it. I was like, I don't have time for this, I'm going to bed. But, you know, Sophie and Sankey sit down and like their food is brought to them almost immediately and then their wine is on its way, a nice Malbec, Sommelier. And then Nate follows them kind of closely and he sits with his back to them sort of. And a waiter comes by and drops an envelope and he finds an earpiece in it. And he was like, oh, this looks familiar. And he puts the earpiece in.
I did like how it was noticeably like larger and clunkier than Hardison's earpiece.
Oh, yeah. Because she's good, like, but she's not as good as she thinks she is.
Meredith's talking and she's like, it's a two-way receiver. Oh, how special.
It's a what now? Yeah. And she's just like really creepily just standing kind of in the lobby, like hostess area, like peering through a little crack in the wall, like watching them. Like you could feel somebody's eyes on you. I don't know. And Hardison comes up as the sommelier, and even though he's being fed lines by Elliot, he's very bad at it.
Mm-hmm.
But he's not, he's is both bad and not recognized by Sankey, who auctioned him off the day before. Which, can we talk very briefly about how problematic it is to like auction off a black man?
Yeah.
It's like, it's not a good look. It's not a good
look. No.
But, yeah. So, but it doesn't matter that he doesn't recognize him because pretty quickly, Hardison just spills a bunch of wine.
Which is a very awkward scene. Like, he spills it out of the bottle, but he, like, jabs it into his collarbone and then tips the bottle. Because you can splash someone with wine out of a wine bottle, right? Or, like, drip on them. But it's kind of hard to, like, glug, glug, glug onto someone. And it that was one spot where that was... Not the one I was thinking, but that was one spot where I was like, the directing on this is bad. Or like, unfinished somehow. Like that, there's so a I better think, way to do that. Like, put it in the glass and spill a glass, or like...
He's like swirling the glass and it like gets on him or something.
Right, or like put it in a decanter. Or like, he could have been like decanting it because it's a red.
Mm-hmm.
And like, so he could have been doing that and then like spilled it. Just, it just seemed...
So they did, in the commentary, applaud Aldous Hodge for how well he spilled this wine, because it only gets on Sankey's blazer, because it could not get anywhere else, because they only have that one shirt for him and like those one pants, which are which is the bottoms of his suit from the day before. So part of me thinks that the way that he spilled it was very intentional, okay. So he didn't get it anywhere else. So it does look awkward, but I think it was for a purpose.
Yeah, I still feel like that's,
shirt off.
That's a problem that could have been solved with more time or more money, which is supporting my hypothesis that they were lacking one of those in this episode.
Yeah, well, I mean, they got the guy from MASH.
Yeah.
They kind of, and Emma, like, they kind of blew their budget.
I did really love the joke, though, which we skipped over, where when Nate sits down, he's doing his crossword puzzle, and he asks for a five-letter, the waiter's like, what can I get you? He's like, a five-letter word that makes your hair stand in. He's like, I'm sorry, sir, we don't have words on our menu.
That is like a really funny, awkward line that I could totally hear a waiter saying. Like,
right? And then like,
what? Sorry, we don't have words.
I'm sorry, is this a Denny's? You have words on your menu? Come on. And also, if that waiter works at a fancy rich people restaurant, that is not the weirdest thing he has heard that shift.
No. That's true. That's not the weirdest thing that's been requested of him.
Yeah, no.
Yeah. So, Sam-Gee goes to clean up, and he does not get the chance because Elliot just running jump punches him.
It's a super, like, careful, well thought out plan, and then kidnap Oscar! Boom, boom, boom!
Boom! And it's almost like they just beat him up, and then they don't kidnap him. He is free later. It's interesting. And Sophie's kind of been left on her own, and, you know, the check comes.
Not part of the con, by the way.
What?
If he was not part of the con, then, like, this random dude who, like, is on vacation in the Hamptons and is helping out at the country club and meets a pretty duchess and he likes her sparkly dress and then he just gets beat up by his sous chef.
There's wine spilled all over his linen jacket. And you know, by the time he came to, that wine had set. It was never coming out.
I don't know. Elliot might have put it in some club soda. But, like, it would have been much funnier if he was not part of the con.
It honestly would have. Oh my god, that would have been so great. And then he goes to another leverage type crew and he's like, these people hurt me for no reason. Somebody tries to take out the leverage crew, but they're not as good.
Somehow he goes to Bonanno, who's on vacation there. Bonanno's just like, oh my god.
Bonanno's like, you get used to it.
Yeah, it's fine.
I'm imagining Bonanno in the Hamptons. That's a lovely mental journey for my mind.
Yeah.
So Nate comes to Sophie's rescue and pays for her lunch, and then they promptly leave before he gets his credit card back.
Which is, seems like a bad thing to do as a grifter, to, like, leave credit cards behind.
Maybe it wasn't a good credit card. Maybe they're just like, we're going to dine and dash real quick. Artisan will take care of it later. It's fine. But she gives him his clue, which is tease, to make your hair stand up. And he's like, oh, look, that's the key to it, everything. Because she had, when he asked the waiter earlier, you see her kind of look over at him. And, you know, they chat for a minute, and he was like, do you want to go get some Italian ice at this place down by the water? I heard it's way better than the dessert here. And so they kind of walk off, and it's really clear as they're, like, talking to each other that he's charming her. And Meredith is now in her town car with her driver, like, watching everything with a telephoto lens on her camera.
It's very Veronica Mars.
You know, there are moments where she's like, oh, you're not going to get it. Like, you're sitting in the shade and she has an ice cold dessert. Like, she's going to shiver and thanks. Nice to meet you. You're done. But he just takes off his jacket and she's like, how did you think of that?
That's the line where he takes his jacket off and puts it on and she's like, oh, you clever boy, always thinking ahead, aren't you? That's literally how she says the line. There's, like, no pause, no break.
No, like, variation in her voice.
No, it's like, who speaks like that? Oh, an actress who is just doing a run through and not actually doing, like, doing the take that's gonna get used, and then they used it.
Ooh. They just, like, yelled it from outside the car, like, try this line, we probably won't use it, but just say it. Yeah. And they even have a moment where they're sitting and, like, chatting, and a little girl and her dad are playing catch, and the ball rolls over towards Nate, and he picks it up and, like, tosses it back and, like, gives her some tips. And that little girl is director Mark Roskin's daughter.
Cute.
And, you know, then Nate and Sophie have, like, what's actually, like, a real conversation between the two of them. And she asks, like, oh, did you and your dad ever play catch? And he's like, no, he took me to Fenway all the time. And that was the only time it was just me and my dad and not Jimmy, which, you know, if you know the background of Nate and Jimmy Ford, it's not.
Yeah.
Which is also reminding us about Nate's dad, maybe.
Yeah, almost as if he might need to come back in an episode or two.
Weird. Also touching base on relationships. Hmm.
Yeah.
Hmm. And then Sophie talks about cricket per minute.
Yeah.
And, you know, then they stare at each other. We got some soul gazing and he calls her beautiful. And then they get up to leave. And Meredith's like, okay, I'm impressed. And then she takes out her comm. And Nate can tell, so he takes his out too. And he takes out his other comm as well at that point, I think. And then they have this like really sweet conversation. So they're kind of walking where Meredith can't see them from her vantage point in the car. And they're meeting up with Parker, who's driving a cab this episode, which I think should come back more. I think Parker driving a cab is just like a really great trope.
I think she should just have a cab as her car.
I think that would be amazing.
And like that's an ongoing issue where she is late to things because people get in her cab and she like forgot to turn the light on. So she just gives them a ride because she can't blow her cover. And they're like, you were late to steal stuff. Like,
she's like, it's fine. I did it. It's okay. But, you know, Sophie says something about, what is she? Oh, he says, you know, time to get a move on. And Sophie says, well, I thought that's what you've been doing already. And he kind of stops and he's like, listen, I picked you. Like, Hardison and Parker and Elliot, they were picked for me, which is reminding us of DeBenich back at the beginning. Like, he didn't choose these people for his crew, but he, when he needed a grifter, he knew that he needed Sophie to bring it all together. So he, like, sought her out. And she's like, oh. And they kiss, and it's very sweet.
It is very sweet, but also, this is still not the time and place for the conversation. Like, you know that there is a grifter who is working with a crew.
Who could be anywhere.
Right. Like, don't pause and make out behind the bush. Keep up your cover.
I know, like, they're a little fast and loose.
It's like when you're in a play and they're like, don't, you got, you know, you don't stop acting the second you hit the edge of stage. You have to act your way off the stage because some people on the stage are still going to be able to see you.
That's true. Yeah.
And like, it will take him out of if you suddenly like pull your wig off the second, like, I don't know. They should not have kissed behind the bush. It bothered me.
Fair. But I do think it's a good point to make. And that could have been made somewhere else, you're right. That
Nate, I think it's an important point, but
yeah. Nate is consciously picking her. And then we skipped the Parker finds Meredith's office, which is just like a photography studio, and there are photos of all these girls, including Lacey. And her, who has a horrible wig on.
Real just bad.
Real bad. And it says, thanks for everything, Julie. And Parker's like, it still says Julie. Like, who's Julie? She's just like very confused.
The only picture that has anything written on it.
So I wonder if she's the only one who actually has gotten married to her dude.
Maybe. But also, it didn't need to have anything written on it. It could have just been a picture.
To have something written on it because otherwise they would have no reason to think her fingerprints would be on it.
Oh, fair enough. Okay.
Well, what they should have done is have other ones signed.
Yeah. It doesn't even have to be all of them, but just some of them.
Yeah, a couple. Yeah, at least
there's seriously like 3 dozen pictures on that wall.
Mm-hmm. And this one's like the bottom right corner.
And this is the only one with stuff written on it.
Yeah. But Parker grabs it, and she, like, gets a little binder clip to grab it so they can dust it for print, so they can CSI it. So back at the park or wherever they are, Nate hands Sophie into Parker's taxi, and then Meredith shows up in her town car and is like, let's go. We're going to go discuss our new partnership. And Nate gets in and he still has his comms out of his ear. And so they're kind of nervous given Meredith's track record of, you know, murdering people. And this is where like the timeline gets a little iffy for me.
Yeah.
Because they stand there. Nate has gone off with Meredith. They stand there, they dust the out in public, dust this picture for prints, take pictures. The first one, it comes up blank. The second one, it comes up for a girl named Christine Velada, who only lives a few minutes from there. So, okay, a few minutes from there. And they, like, peel off in the taxi to go see her and confront her. And it's just Elliot and Sophie who go, and they, like, just show up in this person's backyard. She's gardening. She also now, again, looks completely different again from the first image we saw of her with Wellesley to the bad and it's way been, to this.
Like, we don't know how long it took from when they got the job in Portland to when they got to the Hamptons, but this is not even a day after they started the con. So she can't have been gone for more than like a week and a half, 2 weeks.
Yeah, what does he say at the beginning how long she's been gone?
4 days.
4 days. Yeah. So it's been about a week. If they didn't do much recon before they left.
I mean, I guess she could be a local Hamptons girl.
Yeah.
Who owns a house big enough to have a garden in, or lives in a house big enough to have a garden in the Hamptons, where real estate is notoriously cheap.
And this, yeah. I mean, to be fair, from the back, it doesn't look like a huge house. It looks like an older neighborhood. Right. And there must still be, like, townies who live in the Hamptons who, like, have to be the staff or whatever. And I can see how someone who kind of lives in that background would be like, sure, I'll grift a man and marry a billionaire.
But she, like, got married under a fake name, which, like, okay, fine, whatever. But, like, kept up her driver's license and... or, like, was responsible enough to then get a driver's license in the intervening week?
Yeah.
Under her real name? Or she moved back to the place that she was at before? I guess maybe it's, like, a parent's house?
Yeah.
She left her very rich husband and moved back in with her parents?
That her husband never met.
Yeah.
And that's not even what bothers me. It's like this time span of they see her, they're like Christine Velada or Lacey Wellesley, and then she freaks out and is like holding her little trowel at them and like, don't hurt him, I promise I didn't call him. They're like, what are you talking about? And then she like breaks down and she's crying.
Once again, though, Elliot looks at Sophie and Sophie goes and talks to the crying person.
Exactly. Her hair is a very natural brown. It's very pretty. But, like, the picture that we'd seen of her, it was, like, dyed very black and very shiny.
Yeah. Also, when they get her fingerprint, they're like, she's a few minutes from here. It's Sunday. I bet she's home. And they say this line with a background that's just, like, an incredibly crowded street of people, like,
running out, doing things, and
having brunch. And, like, but you're not at home. Like, why would you assume that on a Sunday morning, and yes, she does turn out to be home, but it's like, why?
You know nothing about her. What would lead you to believe she'd be home right now? I mean, she is laying low from people who might be looking for her because she's gone missing.
I guess it could have been a phone call.
Yeah, like, call, she answers, okay, she's home, let's go. Or, like, to have the whole conversation on the phone.
But, yeah, the timing is pretty rough.
Yeah, because then they sit down at a table and talk to her. And, like, she opens up about, like, oh, I actually did fall in love with him. And Meredith got scared that I was going to tell him. And so she threatened him, like, if I didn't leave, they would hurt him, like, she killed her husband. And she's like, and I would have told him, I was working up to it, but I was afraid. And then Sophie has a moment of like, oh, do they love the real you, or do they only love the lie that you've told? Which is another thing that keeps coming up with Sophie. But yeah, like, that whole conversation feels like, I mean, on screen, it takes very little amount of time, but it's kind of implied that they've sat with her. She's opened up with them. Like, maybe they have a cup of iced tea together or a glass of iced tea together. But we don't have time for that because
20, 30 minutes of intense staring into each other's eyes to get to that
some soul bomb staring or whatever. Souls. Is it soul staring? Yeah. Meanwhile, Nate has gone to the marina with Meredith to talk about their possible business association. And that feels like it goes pretty fast. And so you're just like, how is this working? But okay.
Yeah, because it doesn't seem like the marina is far away and they seem to get right down to business. So it's not like, maybe it would have made more sense if she had said, like, I'll meet you in 2 hours.
Yeah.
Or something. And then, like, that's okay. That's how you solve it. That's what you do. You say, she says, come meet me at the marina in a few hours. I have a few things to take care of. Meet me at the marina in a few hours. And they say,
gotta find Sam Gee.
Yeah. Like, we, but then they say, we have found her. She's in New York or wherever. Like, she's in New York City. Hey, I just found out she just signed a lease.
Yeah.
Whatever. Hardison finds her in the computer somewhere. And they say, well, we'll drive. It's going to take us 2 hours to get there. And he says, well, that's cutting it close. But, and then you have it so that they're on their way down there and he's waiting to meet with Meredith.
Yeah, that would make a lot.
And then you build in a little more time for, like, why maybe they won't all be in the right place at the right time.
Yeah. Or, I mean, there's always, like, the unreliable timeline. Like, you, the viewer, we've been making you think these things are happening concurrently when really they were a little ahead.
Yeah.
Which normally could also work, like, very, like, Witcher, you know, like, all of a sudden, like, oh, God, like, these are taking points like, 20 years apart or whatever. But, you know, we clearly established that that's not how it's working.
Sophie hadn't been there, there's no reason that, like, Parker couldn't have found that while they were at brunch. Parker could have gotten the photo, and then Elliot and Hardison were done, like, the whole time that Nate and Sophie were eating Italian ice. Like, they could have been going and interrogating that woman and been like, this is the scam.
Mm-hmm.
Or, like, this is the problem. And, like, they find that out right as Nate is getting into the town car. And then it's like, oh no, what is Nate gonna do?
Yeah.
You don't have Sophie there then, but.
Yeah. In the flashback in a second, we see that everything's going to happen really quickly once it comes to a head on this. Yeah.
I have some problems with this. But
so Nate and Meredith, right, they're having their negotiations. And it seems to be going well. He, like, pops open a bottle of champagne and pours two glasses. And then Sam Gee comes out. And she's like, oh, I guess now is the time I should tell you, like, I already have a partner. And he's like, oh. Yeah, Sam Gee, right? And she straight up asks him if he's a fed. He's like, no, I wanted to get close to your files. And, you know, maybe I could use them and we could work together or whatever. But she's like, no, and I want your, basically she tells him she wants his comms. So he gives her the ones that she gave him earlier. And she's like, no, the other ones too. So he has to give them both to her. And they drop them into the champagne, which I'm like, that's a waste of champagne. There's a marina right there. Right. Throw them in the water.
But also, why go through all this if she's just going to be like, nah. Like, why not just say, like, I'm not working with you. Get out of the Hamptons.
Yeah, here's my partner with a gun. Like,
yeah.
I think she was... thought that it could work, but she tells him, you're not hard enough, you're not ruthless enough, you were obviously already falling in love with the Duchess. And he's like, yeah, what's wrong with that? And she's like, love's not real. And I think that also could have been fleshed out a little more.
Okay.
If we'd known a little about her backstory, why, you know, she's like, love's not real, get out of here. And not get out of here. I'm going to get out of here. And she, you know, she kind of says that whole thing. Love's not real. You're too soft. And she grabs her camera bag and she heads out. Also, they never really, now that I'm thinking about it, really tell us her file. But maybe they did. Because Parker says, I'm going to check her computer and her hard drive. Was there ever a moment where they say...
It seemed like they wanted her files to figure out what happened to...
Well, they realize that she keeps all her files on her SD card in her camera.
Yeah, but like, why do they want her files? Like, because just found out that...
Because they need that to take down the whole ring, they say, when they decide they're going to do the high mini.
Okay. I don't know. Files seem like a weird way to go with that.
Like, well, because in a minute they say that they emailed them all to her future marks and they sent it to the police as well.
What a weird email to get.
By the way, you're being...
Someone bought you at a charity auction and you had a nice dinner. Maybe you hit second base with like this pretty young woman. And then like you went back because you're bored because you have a big meeting to prepare for. And then you get this email that's just like... Here are all of the prostitutes and like how they've been and murder. And you're just like, what the hell is this? What?
I'm like, yeah. So I'm going back through the transcript to see.
Well, so.
Yeah, like Parker never says, I didn't find any files on my computer. They just, it's weird.
Y'all, this episode is kind of a mess.
Oh,
both episode of Leverage and also episode of Let's Go Steal a Podcast.
It's falling apart.
Well, so then she like, she just leaves. She leaves Sankey like to shoot Nate. And she's walking away from the marina, which appears to have a fair number of people there. And she hears a gunshot and then a big splash and she pauses like very self-satisfied at the fact that they've just dumped a body at the very crowded marina. Like, I don't want this to turn into another thing where like Robin teaches you how to do crime because I've done that by accident on this podcast before, but like dead bodies float. Unless you really take some steps to avoid that, and a gunshot is not going to do that. And, like, even if a body doesn't float, a marina?
In the middle of the day.
Right. Like,
in the summer in the Hamptons.
Crowded Hamptons. That body is going to be found in, like, 15 minutes. Like, there's a dude in the water with a gunshot, and he looks like that weird, uninvited whiskey guy from the thing yesterday. Like, what? Like, Dexter threw bodies off his boat by like wrapping them in plastic and driving way out, and he still got busted. Like, well, he didn't get busted, but he framed Dokes. It was a whole thing.
Poor Dokes.
Yeah, justice for Dokes. So don't dump bodies in crowded
don't dump
and
bodies
don't look so satisfied if they do.
Yeah, I mean, also, like, where is everybody? Like, she's the only person in this marina.
Right.
Except for
Sophie.
Because she knows that somebody must be there. And she just says, ollie, ollie, oxen free. And then Sophie walks around the corner. And she's honestly shook. Like, she's like, I did not suspect you at all. Like, you were so good. And Sophie's like, yeah, I know. Like, what? Like, it's hard. And she's like, yeah, she's like, for as good as you think you are, you're not, or as good as you are, you're not as good as you think you are, which she had said to Nate back on the boat. And she's like, wait, how did you, his comms were broken. How did you know that? And then we get a flashback she's like, I destroyed his earbud. And how did you, and then she turns around and he walks out. Nate walks out and she's like, what? I heard you get shot. You heard something shoot. You heard a splash. And then we get a flashback. And I like at first I wasn't watching really closely. And I was like, oh, Elliot shows up, beats up Sanghi, the gun goes off, he throws him in the water. But actually Nate headbutts him first. And that's when the gun goes off. And then Nate just leaves. And Elliot jumps down from the roof of the yacht. And then Sanghi like puts his dukes up and he's like, fisticuffs? Really? And they punch each other a couple times and then he like flips Sanghi into the water.
Here again though, the timeline is just a mess. So like they went next, Sophie and Elliot went next door to Lacey's house and then and found out the whole deal and then came back. Who knows where Hardison has been this whole time? Hardison's still pouring wine. And
No, Hardison's in the car. They pull up to the marina.
Oh,
Elliot
right, okay.
And Parker, Ellie and Parker go running off.
But like, why didn't they just have Hardison and Sophie go and then Elliot and Parker? Because at some point, so now Elliot and Parker have managed to sneak up to the boat that they were already on because they've already established that they didn't know which boat was hers.
Yeah.
So they managed to sneak up to the boat where they're just like at the deck right by the marina and like get on top. So did they like jump in and swim around or like jump from another boat? Like there's
I think
no
they probably
way
jumped
they
from
could
boat
have
to
gotten
boat.
Into position.
Right? Like if maybe they had the GPS from Nate's comms up until she dropped them in the champagne, which is what I'm assuming. Yes. Then they kind of have the area, depending on how well the GPS triangulates, just within a small area. Yeah, I don't know.
The timing does not at all. Like, as I was watching it, I mean, I didn't, like, map it out, but I definitely, like, had my fingers on my coffee table. Like, but if they're here and they go here, how... There are people in too many places at once. And then, like, Hardison isn't doing anything.
He's waiting for Parker to get back with the SD card so that he can get the information, upload it onto his laptop, and then send it to Nate to email to other people.
You know, I honestly...
But why did Hardison have to stay at the cab?
I
could have gone down to the marina.
Does the Lacey plot lift out of this episode? Is it possible that it was a late addition? Like, that they had the plot broken down as just, like, people, we need to go after this grifter. Oh, no, it's a ring. And then they needed to add something in, so they just put in, because there aren't that, you know, they add the scene of, like, her getting, here's the bit at the beginning, the photo, going to see her, and like if they didn't rejigger the rest of the plot around those scenes.
They didn't say anything in the commentary that would make me think that, or like no, there's nothing in any of the trivia or the wikis that I've read.
Yeah, well, but it would have happened. I don't think it would have happened at filming. I'm just wondering if it would have happened during if the writer had like written the script and brought it into the writer's room and they were like, oh, we're gonna add some stuff.
Yeah.
And added something. Because there's no... John Rogers doesn't have an answer post for this one on his blog. Which he does, you know, for most episodes, but not... He doesn't for this one or the Gold Job.
Yeah.
Which as the guest co-host, I feel slighted by because I can't steal all my observations from the blog. But
gotta make them yourself.
It's so much work. I don't know. It just... That... This whole... little like third act resolution, which happens very quickly, is just a big old mess.
I think also the stakes feel lower in this one to me. Like I know that people's lives are at stakes, but it's just millionaires.
But they also
and it's
they're
not
really blasé about like, oh, she's killed some. Wait, how many people have died, and how many is she responsible for?
Yeah.
Like, is she full-on killing her husbands in cold blood? Because they kind of imply that maybe she's, like, taken three different men out on boats and killed them.
At least, yeah.
And then they're just like, what are you gonna do? We got your files.
I know. And I'm like, oh, you better run.
Like, no, she's you a murderer. Better call the FBI.
Yes.
Like, at this point, Parker can arrest her, and the FBI will accept that.
I know. Like, yeah, they're...
But even just, like,
very much treat it very lightly.
The gap between the shooting and her and the splash is, like, much longer when you see the fisticuffs with Elliot.
Yes. Yes.
So that doesn't work.
That also doesn't.
And they just, like, leave him in the water? Like...
I mean, I guess they're...
That's punishment enough?
Is she gonna leave him? Are they gonna run together? I don't know.
He pulled it's a very gun confusing. On me.
Right. Yeah. So Meredith, you know, we already say that they tell her to run, but she's trying to like, oh, so do you want to go 50-50? Like, I didn't just try to kill you. And Nate's like, I wasn't lying when I was after your records. And she's like, I'll never give them up. And then we see a flashback of Parker leaning over the roof and like just grabbing them really quick out of the camera. Like, nobody's going to notice her. This very small space, but it's fine. Well, like, and she's in like all black, and it's like an open light colored things. Like, you see like a dark thing in your peripheral vision.
Well, and now she just knows exactly where to go to steal these, despite the fact that everyone else has had empty burner cell phones the whole time.
Yeah. And I looked back through the transcript. Thank you, leverage.whendarknessfalls.net, for having the entire transcript written out for me to double check. They never explicitly state this was an empty binder. There were no files in it. I couldn't find anything on her computer. The only other place where she keeps data is not on these burner phones, but she has her camera, which has an SD card that could have files on it. They never say that. They're just like, she's like, I'll never give up my files. And they're like, well, too late. We got your pictures.
Yeah.
I mean, if I'm missing it somewhere, please someone tweet me later and tell me. But yeah, so yeah, Nate says, right now all of your details are being sent to every rich and powerful mark you have on file. Oh, and your fingerprints have already been forwarded to the authorities, just in case they want to look into the deaths of all those late husbands. So I guess he is like, they are coming for you. You get a head start, but you won't get far. And then she just, like, walks quickly away. She doesn't even run. She's just like, okay. She goes. Yeah. And then Nate, like, puts his arm out and is like, shall we, to Sophie? And then we go back to McCrory's. Yes. And Wellesley and Lacey slash Julie slash Christine are kissing. And she literally looks like his daughter. She's got like a headband on. Like, ooh.
Yeah, they could have not aged her up, like, but just, yeah, dressed her a little differently. I also didn't, I mean, I get that you want to finish it at McRory's maybe, but like, it doesn't seem like Wellesley lives in Portland. Like, he went there just
Boston.
Oh, are they still in Boston? Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, well, that makes it a little better then. Okay. I was thinking it was Oregon and they, like, made her fly across the country.
No, they're not. They, I mean, they're in Oregon, but they're not in Oregon yet. Yeah.
Okay.
And then they leave. But, we didn't talk about, which is kind of important, Nate only agrees to take this job at the beginning for the payment of a favor from Wellesley at a future date. I feel like that's important to state. Having someone like that in your back pocket.
I don't know if that actually comes back.
I also don't, but I thought.
I don't think it does.
Not this season, anyways. What if it comes back in the reboot?
Well, but Nate isn't in the reboot.
And also, this actor died. But they could still, like, some way, like, don't know, mention it, like, oh, the only reason that we're in New Orleans where there is because so-and-so gave us a job here or something.
So I don't know how, you know, all the current events will affect plans for all television shows ever, not just Leverage. But I do really hope that the reboot has, like, some, like, chickens coming home to roost and having to, like, call in those favors. Like, I want there to be some, they have to put a con together, or, like, put a crew together from other people, or, like, cash in. Like, I was thinking about that when I was listening to last time's episode with Hurley. Like, I want Hurley to be in the reboot in some small way, but, like, if, you know, whatever happens and they have to tap into some of these previous guest stars or at least make reference to them.
I think a lot of people, like everyone that I've talked to, like co-host wise, like you want that, like you want to see like kids that they mentored or like just like little one-offs. You want to see definitely how, you know, the things that they planted around the world, how those might have helped, you know, even if like we see what happened, like the consequences to some of the bad guys, I think that'd be really interesting. Like what happened to Verdagra after we screwed them over, or like things like that.
Yeah.
And what have been the positive or the negative consequences of that? Like, because Verdagra went down, did something else worse show up or something like that? But I definitely would love to talk more about the reboot. But let's finish this up really quick because I love this last. We're so close. This last little bit. oh yeah, I always forget about that last one. As Wellesley's leaving, a courier comes in and he's got packages for Sophie and for Parker, and they're flowers. And Sophie is like, "Oh, I was wrong. You are romantic."
They're like
and,
beautiful long-stemmed white roses.
Yes, and she's like smelling them, which roses don't smell great, but whatever. And she's just like, oh, and she's just so happy. And Nate's like, And Parker's is some made-up like...
No, it's a Venus flytrap.
It's not a Venus flytrap.
Oh.
Like, there's like a close-up of it, and it looks different than a Venus flytrap. It's much more like big. But it is a carnivorous plant, that the you know, prop people made up, and she's like, oh, I wonder what I could feed it. And she's really excited that it, she's like, oh, it's a plant that does something, because like all the way back to,
like episode two, right?
Yeah. Where she talks, they talk about like having house plants and she's like, they don't do anything, but she's just really, she's really happy about this, and she's like showing it to Hardison. He's like, "Oh, does it smell good?" She's like, "No, it eats things. It doesn't smell." But Hardison and Nate look at each other, and they're like, "Obviously, we did not buy these things for our ladies." And they look over at Elliot, and he just like,
nah. "Well, first, Elliot is looking again, kind of irritated. Like, how have you not figured this out yet? Like, obviously, I'm the one who got these." And then they like notice, and then he gives them like the nod of like, it's cool, I've got you guys. Like,
I know,
but I really love though that they're so befuddled, and he's just like, are you serious right now? You can't figure this out.
They're like, was it Sterling? Who could have done this?
Must be Maggie. Maggie would do it. She's thoughtful like that.
Oh, that Latimer. Speaking of Latimer, the very last scene is Latimer calling Nate, and he's at some industrial building, a dam, and Nate's like, I don't have this number, you shouldn't be calling me. And he's like, oh, well, I know somebody who needs your help. And he's like, I know what you want. Like, you want the finder's fee of like, you win if I help somebody else out. Like, that's a con, and I know a con because I've done a million of them. And he hangs up, and he's like, we could have been friends, Mr. Ford. And Nate's like, I don't need any friends. Not any more friends, just any friends.
No friends.
I'm Nate, don't need friends, Ford. And he hangs up, and then Latimer, like, makes another call, and he tells whoever is on the other line that Cuban take the job, and that person answers, and he says, if you do that, that's war. And he hangs up, and he's like, well, war it is then. Dun, dun, dun! I wasn't able to find it, so that dam, which we'll see again in the, you know,
finale. The last dam job. It's kind of a spoiler.
Weird. Is the Bonneville Dam, it's a real dam in Oregon. I swear that background where he is, or one very similar to it, is in an episode of the amazing ABC Family, one season only, sadly, show The Middleman, which is amazing. And also, because he's in everything, has Mark Sheppard in it. But I swear they used that setting for a scene. I'm just like, is that? But I couldn't find it on its wiki or anything, so I could do it. But yeah, and that's the end of The Lonely Hearts Job. Fun episode. Doesn't really hold up to a lot of scrutiny.
No, there's some, I mean, even in that last scene, honestly, it's weird to have that and have it be unconnected to the fact that, like, they just did a whole episode about helping a super rich dude and getting a favor from him, and then that doesn't pay off. It's not like Latimer calls and is like, so I hear you did some work for Wellesley. Let's capitalize on that. Like, there's,
yeah.
It just seemed, I don't know, just weak.
They definitely, they filmed this last scene when they were doing the finale, and then they just inserted it. So it was not filmed concurrently with this episode, and so maybe they didn't think to do that. You would think Carrie, the writer who's in charge of continuity a lot of the time, would be like, yeah, let's fit this a little better. But
I promise I'm actually a huge fan of this show. I'm going to have some complaints about The Gold Job next week, too, because I have some similar issues with it, where, like, it feels like a filler episode, and that maybe it didn't get the care that some other episodes did. And there's some things about it that feel really, like, kind of slapped together, or like, oh, we'll just put some tape on it and no one will notice, sort of thing.
Yeah. And yeah, no, it is, it's a loving critique. It's just because we know the show.
Well, they had less and less of a budget every year. Mm-hmm. And they kept trying to do more with less. So I think maybe this is just like where they had to cut some corners to make some other things work.
Yeah. You have to make choices like that. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, there are some things with this episode that I think they did a great job with, like making a warehouse look like a beachfront hotel property. Like, that's fantastic. When they said that was in a warehouse, I was like, are you kidding? Because a lot of times you can tell when something is green screened, right? We've lived real life. We've watched a lot of television. We can tell the difference. But that, I thought they did such a great job of, like,
the light. No, I genuinely thought they, like, went and rented a beach house to film in.
Yeah. So I think they did a lot of, like, stylistically, there's some really beautiful things.
And they did a really good job with the relationships, and, like, mm-hmm. all of the character work is really on point, and no one really acts out of character.
Yeah. And Elliot, I love this episode for Elliot. I think there's so many little moments, like him reading, him with the hand on Wellesley's hand to, you know, the very end with the flowers.
Also, in the Elliot hair watch, it's getting pretty ridiculously long in this episode.
Yes.
But I don't think he cuts it till season 5, so.
Yeah. So that reminds me of, I texted you, I was like, don't let me forget to talk about this. So now we can, like, talk more reboot stuff, and then if we have high slates, and then we'll wrap up.
Oh, I have a real quick one, yeah.
The end is in sight, dear listeners. But, okay, so.
Feel free to go to times 2 speed at this point if you want.
So, yeah, I texted you last week and I was like, we have to talk about this. Do you think they're just going to be like, well, Elliot cut his hair short? Because does he have actually short hair in season 5? Does he have short hair like
short-ish?
Jacob Stone?
No, it's not as high as like in Jacob Stone. It's kind of like, it's not like a full Morrissey, but it's definitely like a little spiky.
It is a little spiky.
But think about, there's like the episode that's filmed in DC. The one that's just the kids is, I think, the one where he cuts it.
Okay.
Well, I can't think of what that episode's called. Shoot.
Hang on, I'll go look.
It's the one that, there's the one that's just Nate and Sophie with the art theft, and then this is the one after it.
Hmm.
I'm signed up to talk about it because it's in DC, I think.
The rundown job. Oh, yeah, that's, he still has it kind of long. It's just kind of like a little swoopy here. It's not to his shoulders, yeah, though.
But, yeah, I mean, like,
it's a little Dawson Leary.
A little, yes.
For people listening, because, like, what's my hands, you can't see how I'm, like, doing my hands under my face.
I want to see, I haven't watched, is it Almost Paradise, this new?
Yeah.
This new one?
Yeah.
It's, he has short hair.
Yeah. So my question is, do we think he's just going to have short hair, or do we think that Christian Kane is going to get extensions?
I think that it will be
a very important thing,
whatever Christian Kane feels like doing, because there's no reason for him. So normally the reason that people have long hair, like on Buffy and Xena and stuff, why no one ever ties their hair back, is because it covers stunt doubles really well.
Yeah.
Right? Like it, but Christian Kane does all his own stunts.
As many as they'll legally let him do.
Yeah, but like they're not subbing someone in to like, you know,
throw a punch.
Yeah. Exactly. So I don't know that he strictly needs long hair. So I think it's just, but also it's quarantine season. We all have long hair.
Fair.
I mean, they're like, Corey's son's hair has reached this, like, it got a little, like, there was a period of time where it was like, oh yeah, your kid kind of needs a haircut, and now it's reached the most, like, epic stage of just, like, glorious mane.
Right.
And I feel like we're all somewhere on that spectrum of just, like, and I would suspect that wherever Christian Kane is, his hair is probably.
Yeah. I'm like looking at, amazing. Trying to find like some recent pictures of him, like on his Instagram. And his hair is, it's a little longer. I don't know if you can see.
You're not in front of the camera. Yeah, he also looks like he's about to film like a Hallmark movie.
Very much. He's got like a snifter of brandy.
Yeah, I think that he'll have.
I love that he uses a hashtag Kane's Kitchen.
Oh my god.
Wait, he's, is that.
A nerd.
He is a nerd. Wait, is Kane's Kitchen a real place? Does he have a restaurant? No. He doesn't, does he?
I think he does cook, though.
He does cook.
I just don't. I suspect that he'll have shorter hair than he did often in Leverage. I mean, I think that the Jacob Stone hair in The Librarians is good.
Yeah.
That's a good look.
Which I'm finished with, by the way.
I'm very proud of you. Does this mean you'll do a Librarians podcast once you're through?
I don't know. If anybody wants, I'm not going to put this part in the podcast, but I mean, if you want, I would do it.
I would co-host with you. I just don't want to do the legwork of actually recording and posting.
If we finish Leverage, if Leverage ever finishes, because we also got to talk Korean Leverage at some point.
I don't know. We should maybe do a Librarians one. I'm just saying. We could even do like several episodes at once and do less of an in-depth recap of them.
Yeah. I think it'd be fun. And I think that the way that Rose Buddies became wonderful, this could become this is a special Librarians episode because it's a lot of the same actors. Hurley shows up, you know.
Yeah.
No, Wiley's gonna be in the new reboot. Christian Kane.
Yeah. I mean, it almost, I'm amazed at how little winking they did about whether Jacob Stone and Elliot Spencer are related.
That would be so funny.
Because there, I feel like there are some little winks to the Leverage universe, but there's like very little about
why they look alike. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, Jacob Stone does have a lot of aliases. So why couldn't one be Elliot Spencer?
I mean, I guess we know that Elliot is Spencer is his real name because of the racehorse job one.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I would say, like, well, maybe that's not his real name.
That's true.
Maybe his name is Elliot Stone, and he changed it. Maybe his name is Elliot Spencer Stone. And he just dropped the stone.
Maybe they're twin brothers separated at birth.
Different last names. Maybe they're twin brothers.
Whose parents each took one, and they just never parent.
And the Leverage reboot will actually be a Parent Trap remake.
And they're trying to get Noah Wiley back to the library.
I do. Okay, so here's what I want in the reboot. I want at least a passing reference to the librarians and the possibility that they exist in the same universe. They still haven't confirmed if Noah Wiley's like a villain.
I know. Or not. I cannot wait.
So I think that if Nate isn't in it, I think Nate has to be dead or in prison. I think you could say, like, oh, he's...
Because there's no way Sophie wouldn't be with him if he was...
Right. Picking. I think that if Hardison isn't going to be there, either he has to be, like, on a long job where he can, like, Skype in sometimes.
Yeah.
Or the other possibility is that he and Parker have a kid or have adopted a bunch of kids, and he can't leave because he's got to deal with the kids. Because that, I don't see them, like, having a bunch, like, I don't see Parker being willing to be pregnant.
Right.
Particularly, or certainly not very often.
But I can see Hardison fostering children, definitely.
Yeah, like, if Nana has passed, I can see Hardison just being like, oh no, this is what we do now. But so I have to stay with the kids, will you go deal with this issue? I think it's got to be, like, Sophie runs something up the ladder of like, we need help, or I need help with this. You gotta come back.
Yeah.
Maybe they don't. I guess it's also possible that they have split again and like started their own Leverage crews.
No.
But
I will not entertain that. I'm sorry.
It's just, it's weird to suddenly like have, because I don't know who Noah Wiley could be in a way that like isn't, you know, he's probably not Nate's long lost little brother or anything.
No. Yeah, I have no idea who he could be. Also, I'm like looking up, see if he's on social media at all. Because I noticed that Gina Bellman has been tweeting about Sophie, like being Sophie, like messing around with different accents, and she's excited to have Sophie back. And then she took a picture of luggage as if like she's on her way to be Sophie. And then her latest tweet was, I thought it rained a lot in Portland, but now I'm in New Orleans and I knew nothing about rain. So I'm like, she's there. Are they already shooting stuff for her? Like, and then I was looking at
how open Christian Louisiana is.
Neither do I, but I know we just got a lot of rain in that area. Christian hasn't posted anything about it. His feed is mostly like people watching Almost Paradise and like trying to get that picked up for a second season. Beth, one of her most recent like selfies, somebody in the comments asked like when they're going to start filming, and she said as soon as it's safe enough for the industry to start opening back up, but we don't know yet. But that was like a couple weeks ago. But like Gina Bellman's all like, I'm packed, let's go.
I mean, I wonder also if
they've got like separate shoots that they're
doing. Yeah.
If she's not going to be with them the entire season.
Yeah. I mean, the way these episodes break down, they are often on their own doing stuff, just talking into the comms. So,
yeah. All right. So, do you have a heist light?
Sort of. So, I did a search for like sweetheart Black Widow scams, and then my internet exploded because of how many options there were to pick from. Because this is like a very old scam. But I did find on AARP's website, they have like scams to watch out for if you belong to AARP. And they have one, and this just made me like, I don't know, kind of sad. So that faith-based dating is apparently a growing scam where sort of the like sweetheart scammers are particularly targeting faith-based like sites like Big Church or Christian Mingle or J-Date, because people are much more susceptible to scams if they're like, you know, have strong faith and think that someone else shares that faith.
Oh, it's like the affinity scams where like if you're part of the same like ethnic minority, yeah. Like,
but so they'll okay. be like, oh, but she's such a good, you know, she's a good Catholic girl, she's a good, you know, she's devoutly Jewish, she would never do this. Like, and they are just full on pretending to be of whatever faith it is to try to, yeah. So the scam thing is like, you know, your plan before getting involved with anyone online, use Google or Spokeo.com to research the person and even view his or her address on Google Maps. Finding no results is a red flag. Do a Google image search for a profile picture. Keep in mind that people who are legitimately looking for love won't ask for money unless they're your kids, which is A, adorable, but also like, don't use Spokeo.com if you're trying to search for people.
I've never even heard of that.
It's not a good search engine.
Okay.
It's like, or it like, it's not even a search engine. It's like a public records search.
Oh, but okay.
It has very poor results and you have to pay to see them. So just Google people. It's fine. Like, look and
just
see if
they're
on
Facebook.
And if you're not sure, if you are listening to this and you're concerned that you might be at risk for being targeted by a romantic scam and you're not sure if the person online is legit or not, ask a trusted friend or your child, or worst case scenario, your local public librarian, if this sounds sketch. And yeah. They'll tell you, sketch or no sketch. Like,
oh my gosh, you can message me on Twitter, and we will have a live sketch or no sketch, and we'll tell
at
you.
At Librarian Stee, she will tell you if she will Google, do a reverse image search. TinEye.com, also great to see if that picture has someone else's name attached to it elsewhere on the internet.
Very important. Very important.
Yeah. That's my, like you, my PSA.
Sometimes you teach people how to commit crimes better, and sometimes you teach them how to not be crimed. Look,
if you're messaging someone online and they send you pictures and you think they're too good to be true, ask for a specific picture.
Yeah.
Not like holding up today's newspaper, because that's kidnappy stuff.
Like, oh, hey, you said you had a dog. Like, what's your dog doing right now? Or like,
yeah,
show me your dog right now or whatever. I don't know. Whew. But speaking of like dating people who aren't who they say they are, I found this article because I was like looking up like heists in the Hamptons, and this is only came up because the person's last name is Hampton, but he did con rich socialites in Manhattan. So David Hampton, this is from back in 2003 when he passed away, but he was pretty famous because you might have heard his story before, because it was made into a stage play and then it was made into a movie. He was a very charming Black teenager in the 80s who conned members of the city's white elite with his outsized charm. So he duped them into believing that he was a classmate of their children and the son of Sidney Poitier. and that he was a victim of muggers who had just stolen his money and his Harvard term paper, which was titled Injustices in the Criminal Justice System. So he, you know, basically it was just like one couple that he scammed. But he had this like modest payoff. He got to live with them for a while. He got some cash. And he also, you know, just, he just pulled one over on these rich, you know, gullible people. And, you know, was like living in this glamorous Manhattan lifestyle that he'd always really looked up to, because he grew up in like upper middle class Buffalo, which he thought was really boring. And he'd always like idolized New York City, where it was glamorous and fabulous. But, you know, it didn't turn out too great, because it's not the best con. And he received 21 months in prison for his crimes. But he was also the inspiration for the play Six Degrees of Separation, which then was turned into a movie, which he was not psyched about. Because some of the stuff is not based on the real case, but some of it is, like the couple coming home, who were the former editor of Newsweek and his wife, coming home to find him in bed with another man. and all this stuff. But he, like, you know, served his time in prison, but he, like, never stopped being a con man, and he would just, like, con people out of things. And there's, they don't come out and they kind of, like, skirt around what he died of. And this was, like, in 2003, but it says, they interview this woman who cleaned out his small room in an AIDS residence after he died at Beth Israel Medical Center. So that's probably what he died of. But they kind of interview this, his last big, not last big, but his last kind of con, which is a man that he took out on a date. And I'm just going to read the whole thing because it's great. It says, one of his last victims, at least as far as law enforcement officials know, was Peter Bedevian, who went out on a date in late October 2001 with the man he knew as David Hampton Montilio. Before heading for a restaurant, Mr. Hampton said he wanted to take Mr. Bedevian to a 9/11 celebrity benefit, but that he needed to be fronted $1,000 for the two tickets. Mr. Bedevian withdrew the money from an ATM. Mr. Hampton dashed into a downtown hotel to buy the tickets from a friend from LA who was in town. And then the two sat down to eat. They lived it up. They ate and drank and talked about everything from the need to break out of their post 9/11 funk to the extraordinary talents of Billie Holiday. He was able to pick out a little information, extrapolate, and use it to make me feel even more comfortable, Mr. Bedevian remembered. He added, he knew how to tease you with, oh, you were going to go to this benefit and so-and-so is going to be there. Mr. Hampton ordered a couple of $23 shots of fine scotch as after-dinner drinks, Mr. Bedevian recalled. But it seemed the right thing to do. Both men were living for the day. Later would come the pain of having been suckered, of Mr. Hampton excusing himself to the restroom, never to return, of getting stuck with the $423 dinner bill, of pressing criminal charges to get back his $1,000, of identifying his charming dinner date through the glass of a police station's one-way mirror. But Mr. Bedevian also had this to say about his night with the notorious David Hampton, seeker of the fabulous. Honestly, he said, it was one of the best dates I ever went on.
Aww.
It's like, oh, rest in peace, David Hampton.
Yeah.
So yeah. That's my high slate.
It's a good one.
Yeah. All right. So, Robin, thank you for coming on. Do you think you'll do another episode soon?
I think I'll do the next one.
Oh, okay. Cool. So you won't hear us again, but you'll see us again. No, you won't see us again, but you'll hear us again in 2 weeks to talk about the gold job. Yay. And we promise we still really do love this show a lot.
We do. All right. Good night.
Good night. Bye.
Bye.